Welcome to the Champions Rugby Show. I'm James Burridge, and the Heineken Champions Cup final is almost upon us.
Simmons darting, dummying, and scoring! Chiefs surely now headed for the final,
and Rassing have to score, and the race for the final, and Imhoff gets there. Oh, that just might be one of the greatest moments in Rassing's history.
Exeter Chiefs take on Rassing 92 as both clubs aim to win club rugby's ultimate prize for the first time in their history. I'm joined by a brilliant panel of guests, and we speak exclusively to one of the world's best players as we preview the Heineken Champions Cup final. Welcome along to the Champions Rugby Show. What a crazy season it has been. An elongated season, but after an eight-month break due to the global pandemic, the Heineken Champions Cup is this Saturday, the 17th of October, as Exeter Chiefs take on Rassing 92 at Ashton Gate. There's also the Challenge Cup final between Bristol Bears and Toulon on Friday, and you can watch both matches live globally on epcrugby.tv. You can also watch on BT Sport, Channel 4, Virgin Media, FRDA and BN Sports. Commentating on that match for BT Sport, one of the best in the business, a good friend, Ali Eakin. Ali, lovely to have you with us.
Great to be here, James.
And we also have the Rassing 92 and Wales legend. It's been a busy week for this man, Jamie Roberts. Jamie, lovely to have you with us too.
Yeah, how are you guys?
Congratulations, I should say, first of all. Great news on a personal front. Man of the match as well for Dragons against Zebra. It's been a crazy week for you too.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. Obviously delighted to get the result for an ITA. Expecting a little boy in February. So yes, busy time ahead.
Isn't it just? We've got a big treat coming up with an exclusive interview with the Rassing 92 fly half, Finn Russell. He's going to drop in for a chat too, and what a season it has been for him. Let's get things started though. Jamie, your old club, you've got so much insight on Rassing, we'd love to hear it. What do you think has been the difference since they missed out in Bilbao in 2018 from a Rassing perspective?
Yeah, I was there in 2018 in Bilbao. I was working with Sky, and Rassing had that game won. And they fooled around in their own 22, if you guys can remember. And Leinster took advantage, scored, and you know the game just went away from them. You know, they lost the final in 2016 as well. And so here they are. They find themselves in familiar territory. And familiar territory for probably the spine of the team. But there's been a lot of turnover in that side since 2018. But the spine of the team is still there. You look at the likes of Machinot, Henri Chavancy, you know, ever-present. Wan Imhoff, who's, you know, for me, one of the best wingers in world rugby. But then the back row of Larey and LaRue, Camille Chatt is just a force of nature over the last few seasons, at club and test level as well. So those guys are really just stepping up to the plate, and they can play any way. You know, you can play the game in many ways. And when you look at different teams across the tournament, they all seem to kind of have an identity. Rassing, with Finn Russell at the helm, they can play any game. They have a very strong power game. They can chuck it about. Their kicking game is spot on. You know, the halfbacks, the Teddy Ribberen and Max Machinot, are two very good kickers of the ball. And in someone like Finn Russell, I know we're going to speak to him during the next half hour, 45 minutes, he's just a maverick. And when you've got a player like that behind a pack like that, you know, it puts you in position to win trophies.
Can't wait to hear from Finn. Ali, it's been a busy few weeks for you because you were there commentating on Exeter's win over Toulouse. And you were there back at Sandy Park for the victory against Bath. From your perspective, the last 12 months, what are they doing differently? What is different about the Chiefs this season?
I don't think they're doing a huge amount that different, if I'm honest. I think they're just doing it a tiny bit better. I've always thought that they've had the squad to go deep into Europe. They've developed that, of course. They've brought in some key men, the likes of Johnny Gray, Stuart Hogg, you know, a little bit of stardust there to add to what they already had. They've got a tremendous belief in the way that they play and a confidence that obviously floods through a team that is winning, relentlessly winning, as they have been all the way through the league and, of course, in Europe as well. And I think probably hunger would be the one thing that maybe has just ratcheted up a notch or two. You know, they've missed out quite a bit. As we know, they've been in four Premiership finals. They've won only one. Europe has been uncharted territory for them to this point. Just one quarter final before this appearance in the final. they are really, really hungry. And I think the Saracens situation with the salary cap issues has exacerbated that, because I think they feel stung. They feel a little bit robbed about what happened over the course of the last few years. Saracens hoovering up trophies left, right and centre. And who knows what might have been. And they're not sitting there, you know, with a case of sour grapes, I don't think. But I definitely think it's fueled the hunger, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, just a reminder, the official match programmes for the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup finals are available for sale to fans by mail order. You can go to epcr.com for more on that. Let's focus on Racing 92 now. Here's a reminder of how they've performed in the Champions Cup since lockdown.
Look at Shaw. Takes so much knocking down onto Iri Barren. That was fed on to Russell. The sweeping pass. They've already got a man over out wide. And the first score, it comes inside 2 minutes. And it goes to Louis de Pichot. Francois Trandu, the little nudge over the top. The bounce comes straight into the grass for the veteran. And this time it will count. And Finn Russell knocks the ball into touch. And Racing have come here and done the job. Racing 92 will take on Saracens in the semi-final. What a cracking tie that promises to be.
Now the little chip ahead of Bakatawa. Oh, he's managed to take it. Gets it away to Russell. And Racing have to score. And the race for the final. And Imhoff gets there. Oh, that just might be one of the greatest moments in Racing's history. The button has to be pressed. Maitland enveloped by Zeebo. And Saracen's defence dies under a Parisian roof. The defence of the title over, and it will be a while before we see them again in Europe, but not Racing.
Yes, they have certainly entertained us in this year's tournament. Ali Ekin, I was struck by what Joe Worsley said a few weeks ago about Racing. He said they don't overplay anymore. They'll kick to space and wait for an opponent to make a mistake. But that's a dangerous tactic against Exeter because they just love possession.
Yeah, they'll keep the ball all day if necessary. And if you give it to them, you might not see it for really quite a long time. And that can be very, very dangerous, as we know. I think this is going to be a fascinating matchup on so many different levels, not least because I think Racing are one of the few teams that really can match Exeter for muscle, for simple, all-out power. Now, you could say the same thing for Toulouse, and we know what happened to them in the semi-final. But I think they've just got a degree of calm, and I'm going to use a word that is not usually associated with Finn Russell, which is control. But if you have the mental calm, and I think maybe, as Jamie was saying a couple of years ago, they were a bit panicky at times. And we definitely saw that in the final in Bilbao. We've seen it before. I think a few years back, they'd have lost that game to Saracens, trailing as they were on the scoreboard. Final few minutes, you know, everything's on the line. They were calm enough, and of course they had the genius enough to get it done. But I think that is a very small difference to what we've seen from Racing over the last few years. And if they can ally their muscle power to a degree of mental calm and accept that Chiefs will hold onto the ball for long periods and try to weather the storm that way, they've definitely got the characters who can pull it out of the bag.
One of those characters, Jamie, is Virimi Vakatawa. Now, this is perfect because you're a centre. You can give us this level of insight that we lack. Tell me what makes him out to be one of the best centres in world rugby right now.
You say one of, I'd probably say the. You know, for me, he's been European Player of the Year, if not one of the players of the year in world rugby, certainly in last year's World Cup. Frightening, frightening player. I remember turning up at Racing in 2013, and there was this young lad in the academy who was training with the backs. Could hardly speak a word of English. Don't know if he could speak a word of French either. and was absolutely carving the lads up. You know, whether it was one-on-one, two-on-one, you know, backline moves against each other, or just playing games. Like, Jesus, who is this lad? And it was Virimi Vakatawa. He was in the academy. And I'm delighted that he's gone on, you know, to fulfill his potential. He's a frightening player. You know, a lot of people in England purring about Semi Radradra and his influence at Bristol. I think this guy's another level. and put him in space. I think what Racing will do is they'll look at the game from the weekend. I looked at Exeter's semi-final against Bath. I watched quite a bit of it. And what's obvious with Exeter is they don't bring much line speed defence. They're quite happy for you to play to width. And Bath did that, but they just lacked that kind of firepower out wide. But when you look at Racing's team, when you look at Vakatawa, Beal, Dupichot, Imhoff, Teddy Thomas, Zebo, when you look at this sorts of players, if you can get those lads in space, I mean, it's a frightening backline, is it? And Vakatawa is at the heartbeat of that. I mean, you try and tackle that guy one-on-one, having a hope in hell.
Al, I was struck by what Rob Baxter said on BT Sport the other day, that they are very happy just to defend for a long time in this final, because that's his test for him. That's his litmus test about whether his side are mentally tuned in, whether they're right for that. Conversely, what do you make of Racing's defence? Because if we go by the cliche that defence wins tournaments, wins championships, does Racing's defence against Exeter hold up?
Well, it's a very good question. We'll find out soon enough, won't we? And of course, they will be asking lots of very different questions. And I think one of the things that Exeter managed to do against Toulouse, and of course have done for many, many years now against other Premiership teams, is just control territory, get inside that 22, and then be utterly clinical from 5 yards out, from 15 yards out. There is no team quite like it in turning pressure into points. So I think Racing are going to have to make sure that they limit the opportunities for the Chiefs to get inside the 22. We know that if they get there, they are more than likely to score. Look at what happened to Bath on the weekend in the Premiership semi-final. I think they have the wherewithal to do that. I'm not entirely sure if you can actually stop the Exeter Chiefs from 5 metres out. So it goes without saying that what they absolutely have to do is be very disciplined in the middle third of the pitch. Do not be giving away penalties there that will allow for a big booming Slade boot and then the line-out catch and drive. If you can limit those opportunities, then you can limit what the Chiefs do. But it's one thing saying it, it's quite another doing it.
There is one man who we all cannot wait to watch. We promised Finn Russell. Let's hear from him now. I spoke to him a short time ago and I started by asking him how he was feeling ahead of the final.
I'm feeling good. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we've got a big week ahead, obviously, building up for the final. So it's exciting, but it'll be slightly different to normal.
Just describe the sense of excitement in the Racing camp then ahead of the final in Bristol.
Oh, yeah, I think everyone's looking forward to it. Racing have obviously been in the final before. And never managed to win it. So it's a slightly different, obviously, vibe around the club just now, but with a lot of excitement as well. And for me, it's the first time, obviously, playing in a final in Europe. So I think for me personally and for the team, everyone's excited and looking forward to getting over there to Bristol.
I bet. Some of the stuff you've produced this season in Europe has been mesmeric. The kicks, the offloads, the vision. How much of that do you plan? How much is practiced?
I think a lot of that, it comes down to the week that builds up to the game. The analysis you do day in, day out with the coaches and other players, as well as what you see on the field and how things might change. The one in the semi-final, that was something we spoke about during the week, but then it was in the game that me and Vermey and we were sort of chatting about that could be an option. So, you know, it's a mix of both before the game and the analysis that the team's put in. But also in the game, seeing the different pictures and picking stuff up as you go along.
And you've had a stellar season, Finn. It's just been a joy to watch you play. What does it feel like to get the recognition? I mean, you're on the European Player of the Year shortlist with Vermey Vakatawa. What does it mean to know that you're having a good season? You feel you're playing in such a rich vein of form right now.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's slightly different this year, obviously, with the break with COVID. But I mean, it's great to have that recognition. And, you know, I know I've been playing quite well and the team's been playing well, so it's not just me. It helps with the boys I've got around me. And again, like I've said before, with having Vermey outside, who's on the shortlist, it's having, for me as a 10, having the 13 outside, who's one of the best in the competition, if not the best in the competition, it makes it a lot better. And it gives you confidence, knowing that you're playing well and, again, getting the recognition for that. So for me, it's great, I think. Again, it's another first for me, so I'm just enjoying it all just now and just taking it in, just trying to ride the wave.
One of the fabulous things about watching you, Finn, has been the partnerships that you've developed at Racing. Can you just describe what it is like to play alongside Vakatawa? Because you two together have just forged this fabulous partnership.
Vermey, he's probably one of the best centres in the world just now, if not the best centre in the world. in my opinion. I think we get on really well, again, off the field, and then on the field, we've got a lot of simple plays, and it's almost like get the ball to Vinamy and let him do something. And we've got a great kind of trust in each other that, you know, I know if I give him a good pass that allows him a little bit of time on the ball, he's going to be dangerous and suck defenders in on him, or be able to throw a good miss pass or link with the guys outside. And in the game, we played such enjoyment over here that in the game we're happy to try things, whether it's the chips over the top or the missed passes or offloads. So you'll see times in the game that we're kind of having a laugh together, and it just shows our relationship that we're, right, we'll try the chip this ball this time, okay, it didn't come off. Right, next time, we're still there, we can go for it again. And we're playing, like I say, with such enjoyment that if you do make a mistake or something like that, it doesn't affect you. And for Vinamy, you know, he's got a lot of confidence just now because he's playing so well and everyone's right behind him. So having a guy like that outside you, it makes it a lot easier for me just to think about doing my job rather than having to try and create for the team. I know if I can do my job and get Vinamy or Zeebs, Ted Thomas, like some of the guys outside me, if I can do my job and get them the ball in the space that they need, then they're able to do the rest.
So come on then, you and Mike Prendergast sitting down having your café au lait, just plotting the downfall of Exeter in the final. Where do you think you can hurt Exeter then?
Oh, it's definitely going to be the high balls against Hoggy. I've already texted him that. So to be honest, they're a world class team, obviously, and for me they're the best in the Premiership, the best in England just now. So it's not going to be an easy challenge to try and break them down this weekend. But I think for us, it's if we can do a few things, you know, I'd say simple things. If we can stick to our structure and our game plan, then we've got great attacking threats, and as we've shown in the past, we've got a good attack. So although they've got a great defence, there's a few things there that I'll be looking to pick out maybe, which is, you know, like I'm saying, it's the analysis you do in the week building up, and then in the game, depending on conditions, the score, whatever's going on, that might change, and we might try something different during the game depending on how it's going.
And obviously that the banter has been thick and fast, no doubt, with Stuart Hogg and Johnny Gray. But equally, that insight that you have on those two and they have on you could be critical, couldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's four Scottish boys there, obviously, with both Sams, Johnny and Hoggy.
Yeah.
So I know them all very well. So when we're looking at them, I'm chatting to the boys and saying, okay, Hoggy might defend like this, or in attack, he's going to look for certain opportunities. And for Johnny, I mean, he's obviously good in the line out, great in defence and carrying ball. So again, with the forward, I'm chatting about small triggers they might look for on him, depending on what he's going to try and do. Vice versa, I'd imagine they'll be doing the same for me, as they know me, you know, very well, and they know how I like to play. So it's a good thing knowing each other, but then it's probably going to be one of these things that not overthink it, but you know, I might think Hoggy's going to come into the line too early, and then he holds back, so he shows a different picture. And even though we know each other, things will change in the final, and depending on how we're building up for it, they might have a different defensive system or attacking system that they might implement just for this game against us.
I bet. And obviously for Jackie Lorenzetti and the club, it would be huge if you could win this final. I mean, tell me what for the club, the difference it would make if you could call yourselves Champions Cup winners.
Yeah, I think it's huge for the club if we're able to win it. I think it means so much to Jackie. Obviously, Racing have won the league before, but they've never quite managed to win a European title. So for to be the first team to win a European title, it will be huge for the club. And that is one thing I've noticed here, is that European is, you know, both tournaments are a goal to win, obviously, but European, it's a different goal, as it's never been accomplished by Racing before. So for Jackie, for the club, for everyone who's here, that would be a huge moment if we're able to win it.
Well, Finn, it's been fabulous having you on the pod. Come on, you can tell us, no one's listening, what kind of tricks have you got up your sleeve for Exeter then?
I told you, just a high ball to Hoggy.
Yeah, well, we'll see
how a little bit of rain, I'll put it as high as I can and see how it goes. First ball off the, I don't know, I'll chat to Johnny, maybe a five-man line-out, I'll just put it straight up on Hoggy, see how he goes.
Yeah, and I think he knows that. He knows it's coming, doesn't he? He knows it's coming.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, great stuff. Finn, love having you on the pod. Really enjoy talking to you, and best of luck in the final.
Thank you very much.
What a wonderful, wonderful treat it is hearing from Finn Russell there. The full-length interview with Finn will be available as a separate podcast very soon, so make sure you subscribe and keep an eye out for that. It is well worth a listen. Ali Eakin from BT Sport and Jamie Roberts are with us. Jamie, it was interesting what he was saying in that interview. And one of the phrases they have at Racing is prochain boulot, which is next job. And you talked about control earlier, the element he has brought to his game. Tell me what you think the controlled Finn Russell is like when he's not being a maverick.
Well, that control has come from experience and age and maturity, isn't it? I think, you know, we saw Finn Russell burst on the international scene as a young fly half. He's got all the tricks in the bag, isn't he? His, you know, his kick, pass, running game is sensational. But at the top level, you need an element of control. You need to understand kind of risk in the game, you know, score on clock, what the weather's saying. And he kind of lacked that in the early years in his career. And he knew, you know, playing against a team that was had Finn Russell at 10, that he's going to do something that's cost them points. You kind of knew that was almost guaranteed. Whereas now you watch him play and he has that element of control. And that's that he's matured brilliantly. You know, that's come with playing at the top level for a long time. And that experience now, he's bringing that to Racing. But, you know, to have the plums to go for that little chip over the top in that last minute against Sarries in the semi-final, not many outside halves in world rugby would do that. And he had the skill set to pull it off. And he's just playing with a confidence that is so hard to defend against.
He's very free, isn't he, Jamie, as well? It just feels like he's got that kind of very dangerous mindset from an opponent's perspective, that he's just rolling with the punches, not going to be overly downcast when things go wrong. He's going to try stuff relentlessly because he knows that at some point or other, it's going to come off, just as it did in that 76th minute against Saracens. I just think from Racing's perspective, it suits the way they want to entertain everybody. He's just been, in a way, the perfect fit. They've obviously had some very high caliber tens there in recent years, but I think you could argue that the likes of Carter and Sexton probably didn't produce their absolute best rugby whilst they were with Racing, whereas Finn Russell has gone there and has been totally liberated by the whole process. He obviously really likes working with Mike Prendergast as well, and the philosophy there is, here's a framework, but I really want you to express yourselves. And if you're asking Finn Russell to express himself and play with a smile on his face, you're going to get results because that is how he ticks.
It's a trust thing, isn't it, Jamie?
It is a trust thing. And for Finn Russell to be able to behave like that as a rugby player, it's trust in his teammates having trust in him, and it's consistency of quality as well of those around him. You know, you look at guys like Henri Chavonti, you know, he's been there since he was in the academy at Racing. I think he's played over 300 games for the club. You know, the guy is bleeds blue and white. And, you know, when you have someone like that alongside you, you have Max Machinot, who's, you know, is a test nine, someone like Simon Zebo, again, who's playing some brilliant rugby, a fullback, established quality, calm-headed players. Well, then I think as an outside half, you can take a few more risks. And someone like Finn Russell, as you said, Ali, he's playing with a smile on his face. He's given that confidence within the framework to show his skill set. And he does have a fantastic kind of range of skills, whether he's, you know, whether he's running, he's quick, he's elusive, his kicking game is fantastic. And his you know, his decisions when to kick, pass or run are usually spot on.
And of course, it all starts in the forwards, in the pack, Ali. If we're talking about matchups, one which perhaps is slightly off the beaten track, but I think will be equally pivotal, is Camille Chat against Luke Cowan-Dickey. Both are absolutely integral to each side's success.
Yeah, they really are. And I think Cowan-Dickey's had a fantastic season. He's pushing Jamie Jules really pretty hard now, I would suggest, for that England number two shirt. Still one or two question marks, I guess, at the very top level over the darts at line-out time. One of the reasons potentially that they've gone to that that tap and go from the 5 meter penalty. Always previously that would have gone into the corner and they would have gone for the catch and drive from the line-out. I'm only surmising that, by the way. I mean, it's not as if the Chiefs' line-out is a major fault line. It's just pulled once or twice, and that might be something that Racing will really look to attack. But in the loose, just like Camille Shah, he's devastating. Just another rolling mass of muscle, basically, along with the likes of Dave Ewers and all the rest of his friends. Racing, of course, are not light in that department. But those two going head-to-head will be mouth-watering. Can't wait for it.
Won't they just? Well, next, we'll be telling you what Exeter Chiefs have to do to beat Racing.
Hi, I'm Simon Zebo, and you're listening to the Champions Rugby Show.
Let's turn our attention to Exeter Chiefs. Here's a reminder of how they made it through to Saturday's showpiece.
And what can Chiefs do with this? They put down a marker at the scrum, and now Slade gliding through midfield, and he finds Maunder, and Maunder, does he turn? Scores. Oh, my goodness. That's what the Chiefs are all about. Slade, such a game changer with that stepping ability, offloading ability. Oh, how about this from Skinner? Goodness me, he's doing it on his own, and it's Vermeulen bursting through, and he will score. Individual stuff at the end of what has been a very much collective effort from Exeter Chiefs, and Jacques Vermeulen finishes the job.
They've come a very long way, the Chiefs. 10 years ago, they clinched promotion to the Premiership that same month. Toulouse won their fourth European title, but today Exeter firmly established, little by little, over the try line, and there's the score. The dam bursting eventually. Simmons darting, dummying, and scoring! Chiefs surely now headed for the final.
We're busy embarrassing Ali Ekim with all his best bits of commentary from this season so far.
Do you have much more of this? Because I'm not sure I can handle it.
Ali, just on Exeter, in the last few weeks, do you think they're beginning to turn the screw, just to raise the quality by a couple of percent?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is what they play for, isn't it? Of course, in this season of all seasons, they've had to be very patient. They've had a lot of time to think about how they're going to attack things after the lockdown, and they've come out firing on all cylinders. They seem to have had a different mindset to Europe this season. There was that big landmark win in round one away to La Rochelle, winning on French soil, which of course, as we know, historically has been very, very difficult for English teams at the top flight of Europe. And it's become a major issue for them, this competition. They feel like they've let themselves down in years gone by. They felt they've had the squad to do more damage. They've fallen short, just one quarter final up to this point. They're better than that. And of course, you know, maybe the Premiership has taken their focus for the last few seasons. But now I think they're equipped with their squad depth, with their confidence and belief. I think they're equipped to fight on both fronts, as witnessed the two finals. And they know that this is their moment. Saracens are out of the picture, for better or worse, on both fronts. And they can really put themselves into the history books over the next fortnight. There's nothing quite like two finals back-to-back to concentrate the minds. And of course, you know, this is what it is all about. This is what they've been waiting for. They would have been crying out for this opportunity in lockdown as they busily pump their weights in their own garages and that sort of thing. You know, this is the time that they need to start delivering. And I think they're all very, very aware of it.
Jamie, Ali alluded to it there. Can I just ask you, just from a player's perspective, just how difficult has this season been given the pandemic? And I ask that in obviously a rugby orientated way, but it has been disruptive, and some sides have struggled since lockdown, and some players have struggled with their own individual performances. And here we are, it feels like we've raced to a European Cup final, and there is no room for mistake now.
Yeah, look, it's been obviously very, very strange, isn't it? And I think for professional athletes, professional rugby players, I think the biggest challenge was just getting out and staying fit. Look, I was in South Africa when this thing struck, and their lockdown there was so strict, people couldn't leave their flats. So if you didn't have a garden, you couldn't really exercise. So I guess players, you know, during lockdown have been able to keep up on their strength and conditioning and not decondition as such. And let's take Exeter for an example. They're such a well-oiled machine, aren't they? They're a machine in the way they play. You know, there's a lot of intricate parts in their game, the way the forwards carry off touchlines, the way the back set up to strike off start plays and phase plays. The machine that is Exeter, during lockdown, as long as all the lads could hold their strength and conditioning, coming back into that machine has probably been a walk in the park for a lot of those boys, because it's just so kind of efficient, if that makes sense. But I think the biggest challenge, look, I've played three games with the Dragons since moving there. It's just the motivation and the buzz. You know, on a personal note, I love the buzz of the crowd, the pressure, the adrenaline. And obviously there is none of that. And so trying to find that buzz and energy, you can hear every word of what's going on the pitch as well. And so any scrum that goes down, you've got both sets of players screaming, trying to convince the ref that, you know, they've won that scrum, or trying to kind of psychologically convince each other that they had the upper hand in that scrum. But you can hear everything. Whereas, you know, when there's a crowd there, you can't hear all that small talk. So that's quite funny. But yeah, it's been a strange time for all rugby players. And look, you know, it is what it is, I guess. Some players have taken on the challenge of coming out of lockdown, better players, better athletes. They've been studious, whilst others might have taken their foot off the gas and maybe lost a bit of form. But I guess, you know, the next few weeks now they're back in with their clubs allows them to refocus on the new season.
I asked you about Vakatawa a moment ago from a Racing perspective. Can I get your rugby analysis on Henry Slade?
Yeah, look, he's a top player. And again, another player who's got it all. You know, he's quick. He's got an outside break. His footwork's great. His passing game, his kicking game. He's just that all-round player, isn't he? And he's a big player for the international side with England as well, and has been for the last few years. I just love the way Slade slots into that back line. You know, he can play at first receiver. You put him out on the wing, he'll finish tries for you. You put him at second receiver, he's a huge threat. And alongside someone like, you know, whether we see Devoto play on the weekend, he played well in the Prem semi-final, or they bring Witten back at 12. That'll be a very interesting selection, especially with the Premiership final the following week as well. But, you know, for me, the standout player in that back line this season has been Joe Simmons. You know, a captain, he's very young. He's obviously a leader within that team. You know, being an outside half would make you a kind of leader automatically, but the way he's stepped up, again, a guy who, you know, whether we see him become an England international this season or next, he's no doubt in the conversation. And he's really taken a huge step forwards in his game and is showing huge signs of maturity and has got them to this final.
Both the Simmons brothers, Ali, have been devastating this year. They've really come of age, haven't they?
Yeah, they really have. You've got to remember, Joe Simmons is only 23. They brought him into the leadership group at the Chiefs last season, I believe, just because they knew, quite obviously, he was going to be taking over the mantle from Gareth Steenson, who'd been there forever and achieved so much. He is quite a naturally shy bloke. If you go and interview him, you know, he's not an effusive character. He's quite reserved, I would suggest. But on the pitch, you can see that he has been transformed, quite happy bossing people around, quite happy just making sure that everybody's doing their job. And he's got a very clinical element to his game. His decision-making seems to be excellent. We've seen those slicing breaks, maybe just coming in last 15, 20 minutes when the game's broken up a little bit. He doesn't actually get asked to do an awful lot by Exeter, which might sound like a funny thing to say, but I always think it's quite difficult to evaluate just how good Joe Simmons is. I think he's exceptionally good. We all do. We recognise that. He's playing in the best team in England at the moment as their fulcrum. However, the way they use both him and Maunder, they're kind of a conduit between the backs and the forwards. He doesn't boss a team around the park in the way that Owen Farrell does, for instance, for Saracens in England. He is exceptionally good at doing the jobs that Exeter ask him to do. I think it would be fascinating to see him in an England shirt, to see whether he could play a slightly different way, whether he could adapt to the different sort of demands of international rugby. All we can say at the moment is that every single question that he's asked, he's come up with answers to for the time being. And of course, when you're playing with your brother, who is an ebullient character and full of running, so dynamic, so explosive onto the ball, incredibly competitive. And I think significantly for the Chiefs, and anybody who recognises what that club is all about will understand this, they're both Devon boys. They absolutely love playing for that club. They would rather be nowhere else than at Sandy Park and representing the Exeter Chiefs. And of course, that really does matter. They are the heart and soul, the heartbeat of the Exeter Chiefs.
One man who certainly you could add into that category is, of course, Gareth Steenson. We spoke to him on the pod a few weeks ago. And of course, it's his final couple of weeks as a player for Exeter before he hangs up the boots and goes into coaching at Sandy Park. And this is what he says they'll have to do to beat Racing in the final.
Well, they've got threats right across the board, haven't they? They've got a big, strong pack, like most French teams do. They've got some incredibly devastating runners out wide as well, but they've got a wee bit of flair in amongst them, obviously, with Finn Russell, what he does. You know, they've just guys right across the board, good finishers in their game. And we're going to have to be in our mettle, really. I think that score they got at the end against Saracens, we all know how good Saracens are when it comes to defensive efforts and squeezing games at the end. And for them to come through with a little bit of magic from a couple of their flair players just shows you they're never out of the game. And we're going to have to be alert for a whole 80-minute performance, 80, 90 minutes, whatever it's going to take to perform. But, you know, we'll get ourselves ready for it. We'll obviously, whenever it comes around to it, we'll get the emotional batteries charged. And I'm sure whenever it comes to it, we'll want to go out and put in an extra Chiefs performance and because if we do put our extra Chiefs performance out there, it gives us the best chance of winning the match. And we'll be on the day, but you know, it's definitely exciting times and really looking forward to it.
Gareth Steenson on top form, speaking to us a few weeks ago on the pod. You can listen back to that if you get the chance. Jamie Roberts. Rob Baxter talks a lot about creating fatigue in the side. It's obviously worked a brilliant effect for Exeter. Can it work against Racing too?
Oh God, creating fatigue in the side. You know, the way Exeter attack and keep hold of the ball, it knackers you out as a defender. I can testify to that. I've played Exeter quite a few times in the Prem, and they play with width, they play with pace, and just hold the ball through multiple phases. And what happens then, you get tired as a defender. When it comes to your turn to attack, you're just 5% off. You know, you haven't got that zip and out power, which you would have had if you didn't have to defend through multiple phases. So they do that. They squeeze you, and just their collisions. You know, their collision dominance against Bath at the weekend in the Premiership semi was spectacular. Just won the majority of contacts in attack or defence. And when you're just taking that battering, it knackers you out. It's very tiring. I think one area they're potentially vulnerable is when they play off wide rucks, and you see the forwards kind of, you know, someone like Ewers can often kind of suck two or three defenders into rucks because he's so powerful. But often it's only a two-man carry. You know, one forward carries on and out and this other guy cleans. And they're very efficient at it. It's very hard to kind of poach the ball. But when you're chucking guys like Wenceslas Lloré, Camille Chatte, who's very, very strong over the ball, Bernard Leroux as well, if he does play, you know, three very, very good jacklers there. And they will study the way Exeter Chiefs play, because they're not going to play any differently. Let's be honest. You know, Exeter have got to these two finals playing that style of rugby. They're not going to change it all of a sudden now they've reached the final. And there's no doubt Racing are fine-tooth combing how they're going to approach trying to attack the breakdown of this Exeter Chiefs side.
Ali, in all the games you've done of Exeter down the years, when did you last see them put under real, sustained pressure?
Well, at full tilt, you'd probably have to look at Saracens. And I don't think, really, up until recently, when Bath have developed a pretty meaty pack, and they saw them off without too many problems on the weekend, of course, Saracens really the only side who could match them for power. And that is absolutely critical. We know that Racing can do that. And I do think this breakdown situation is very, very interesting, because, of course, they don't play with a jackler. The Chiefs, they've never really played with a jackler, even when Matt Kovesic was there, who was one of the arch jacklers in the Premiership, still is. He was asked to play in a different fashion. They play three back rowers, and they're quite happy having 13, 14, 15 people on their feet spread out across the defensive line and not really committing too much to the breakdown. Every now and again, they've got players who can do it. Absolutely, Simmons and Cowan Dickey, they can do it, but they're not specialists on the floor. And if Racing really go at that area, as I suspect Wasps, well, we all know Wasps will in the Premiership final with the likes of Jack Willis and Thomas Young, then that's an area that they might see their possession, their supply line cut down quite a bit if they are effective. And what we've seen is that the Chiefs have become very adaptable in that area too. So they're very clever at protecting their own possession. The presentation of the ball is always exemplary. They're long as they place it for the nine, keep it out of harm's way, out of the claws of those who might be marauding over the top of them. So I think it's an area that Racing absolutely might exploit. And of course, the other thing is, you know, the mental side of it. And Jamie has been there 1,000 times and will understand this very well. This is quite obviously the biggest game in the club's history. We talked about it a little while ago. 10 years ago, they were in the Championship. You know, when Toulouse won that Heineken Cup in 1996, Exeter were playing London Welsh at Old Deer Park in the fourth tier of English rugby. And you know, Rob Baxter said, look, ahead of the semi-final, is this the biggest game? Well, no, because actually it was much more important we got up into the Premiership so that we could then put ourselves in the position to contest and compete in these sort of scenarios. But there's no dressing this one up. This is the biggest game that they will ever have experienced. And of course, without crowds, they've got to generate their own energy. Yes, we know they're really hungry for it, but there's going to be pressure there. They haven't just come to make up the numbers. They've come to win. And that will play its own little part in proceedings, I'm sure.
Jamie, it's going to be Nigel Owens' seventh Champions Cup final. What kind of game do you think we're going to see, and how Nigel Owens likes to referee matches?
Yeah, look, he's a wonderful guy. Obviously, very, very talented referee. And, you know, to do a seventh final is a pretty significant achievement. He's just a very, very good referee, isn't he? You know, he communicates very well with players. He lets players know early on in games what's acceptable and what's not. And, you know, both sides, you know, here I am preaching that a French side has a very good discipline in their team. That's one reason why Racing now are different to the Racing of old. Their discipline in their team is fantastic. Their defensive discipline, their decision-making around the contact area. And Exeter are no different. You know, I don't expect to see too many penalties on the weekend because teams, you know, Ali's alluded to it earlier. The game now, any penalties in that middle third of the pitch, you're in trouble. And you're likely conceding points. And the game has become that way. You know, players can kick now. You know, your Henry Slade can kick the ball from his own 10-metre line into opposition, you know, 5-10-metre line. So you just cannot afford any ill discipline. And Nigel is going to have a hell of a job on his hands because he's got two sides here who are going to be desperate at the breakdown. And how he referees that in the opening 5-10 minutes is going to be critical to how the game is played out.
Yeah, it promises to be mouthwatering. Now, before we go, we have to mention the Challenge Cup final. That's on Friday, the 16th of October at Stade Maurice David, 9 p.m. local time. You can watch that on FR4, BN Sports and BT Sport. Ali, on Bristol, who I know you've seen a lot of against Toulon, what do you think has been Pat Lam's biggest success with the Bristol side he's coached this year?
I think engendering a real spirit within the club and, of course, within the community as well. He's a past master at it. He's a brilliant man manager and the players love him. He's got some very high caliber coaches around him. He's brought in some extremely high powered, highly talented individuals like Randrandra, like Pierre Tau. You know, even some of the lesser lights, you know, Luke Morahan has been absolutely stunning in the Premiership. And, you know, I know he's a Australian international before he arrived, but, you know, not an awful lot was known about Luke Morahan before he arrived. And he's really torn the place up. And of course, they've got a lot of homegrown players, youngsters coming through. Callum Sheedy has been exceptional. He's grown arguably a little bit quicker than he thought he would grow. I mean, their target for this season was to make top six of the Premiership and, yes, to try to win the European Challenge Cup. Now, they made the top four and they were humbled by Wasps on the weekend. I'm fascinated to know what fallout there might be from that defeat. But we have to remember, again, where they've come from in a very, very quick period of time. And it just may be that they're a little bit ahead of schedule and maybe Toulon will have too much in the tank for them. But what we do know is they will be enormously spirited. They will be full of adventure. They will stick to their plan, their very aggressive, exciting plan, and they will play ball wherever possible. Sometimes that might look a little reckless. They've got much better at working out when to play and when not to play. But when it works for them, my God, it works in a hurry and they can score big points very quickly. So Toulon will be wary of that. I'm just not quite sure what effect it will have, the defeat to Wasps on the weekend.
Yeah, we talked about Randrandra there. You are our in-house centre tonight, Jamie. So we've got you talking about Fakatawa and Slade. Randrandra then, Semi Randrandra. Just tell me your impressions on this guy. Have you ever faced him?
Yeah, I played against him 3 weekends ago. he's not a bad player, I'll tell you that. He's quick, he's elusive, he is powerful. In any amount of space, the guy is lethal. Bristol, again, they have this game where, you know, it's pretty prescriptive. Kind of know what's coming, but it's very hard to defend against when you've got players like Randrandra in space on the ball. And often you see your Callum Sheedy's. They don't take the ball to the line. They just stand there and feed Randrandra and give him as much space as possible to wreak havoc. For me, Bristol, that semi-final against Wasps is arguably an interesting kind of setup for the Champions Cup final. You look, Bristol, a very prescriptive side. Wasps knew exactly what was coming and absolutely dominated the contact area. And so if Racing can take any learnings, I hope the Racing coaches watch that semi-final because Exeter, arguably similar, you know, a pretty prescriptive way of playing, the way that their machine operates, and their opportunity will come at the contact area. You know, that was the problem for Bristol. They got absolutely blown away on the floor. you know, with the jackal threats that Wasps had, and just couldn't dominate collisions. And when you're not going forward and can't get speed of ball, that game plan falls apart. And I think the biggest challenge for them, if they can't get that done in Toulon, well, then what is plan B? What do they go to? And I'm sure they'll be working on that in training this week.
Mr. Andrade is one of the EPCR European Players of the Year. He's on the shortlist. Also, Stuart Hogg of Exeter, Finn Russell of Racing, San Simmons of Exeter, and Viramit Vakatawa of Racing 92. The winner and recipient of the Anthony Foley Memorial Trophy will be announced following the Heineken Champions Cup final in Bristol on Saturday, the 17th of October. Ali Eakin, who would you pick?
Goodness, I mean, so many fantastic standout performances. For me, I think it's Vakatawa. I mean, there have been moments when he's really taken the breath away in this campaign. And we have to remember what he was up to before lockdown as well. I think it's very difficult in this season that seems to be never ending that we forget what happened before COVID. But he was tearing the place up. I mean, he really, really was. And the range of his skills, the power that he has, obviously the speed, but the deft handling, and just that awareness of space and awareness of the moment, the clarity that he seems to have at the all-important moments when it's allied with a guy like Finn Russell, absolutely lethal. I'd go for Vakatawa.
Jamie?
I'd agree.
Well, that was simple, wasn't it? that's the easiest call we've made all evening. And a final call on the Champions Cup final. Ali Eakin, who's going to win the big one?
I hesitate to say this because, of course, they haven't reached this stage before, and we know that this tournament tends to reward those who have been through the mill at the highest level of Europe and fallen just short, which, of course, would point towards Racing having lost in two finals already. They should know what it takes to finally get over the line. But I just think there's something about Exeter this season. We talked about their hunger. They're incredibly efficient at what they do. Everybody knows their roles so well, and they are brimful of belief. And I think they know that these next two weeks, may well define the history of their club in terms of success. So I'm going to go for Exeter.
Jamie?
If it's dry, Racing to win. I think if it's wet, I think Exeter. I think they have a better control at half-back, and I think they have the bit of a set-piece upper hand over Racing. So, yeah, I'll go. I think if it's drizzly, if it's greasy or wet, I think Exeter will produce the goods. If it's dry, I think Racing will score some brilliant, brilliant tries. I'm excited by it.
Great stuff. Jamie, it's been fantastic to have you on the podcast for this. Who have you got next? Back to training this week, no doubt?
No game. So I'm actually working at that final down at Bristol Saturday in TV capacity, and then Ulster away.
Good stuff. And Ali, you're commentating for BT Sport, I think. And it'll get your pulses racing this on, won't it?
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, we've all been waiting for these showpiece moments, moments that should have happened, of course, in May. And, you know, we've been starved of these sort of special occasions, I guess. Occasions when the adrenaline really flows. And even without crowds, crushingly without crowds, you know, hopefully we'll do our bit on the telly and of course, all across all the other outlets that everybody's covering it on to bring the excitement, the drama, the passion, the intensity of these kind of sporting contests, because I think the world needs it right now. And with a bit of luck, we'll get an absolute screamer.
Fellas, thanks so much for your company. BT Sports, Alistair Eakin, and of course, Jamie Roberts joining us on the pod. Thanks very much for listening. A reminder, you can watch both the Heineken Challenge Cup and Champions Cup matches globally on epcrugby.tv from €1.99 for live action of the finals weekend. And you can also buy programmes for both finals via epcr.com. Remember to subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast using your favourite podcast provider and leave us a review. But for now, from me, James Burridge, it's goodbye.